Good morning. You may proceed.
Please, the court. Understanding that the court has read through everything, I'm going to address first the issue that the court directed that we briefed that had not been included in any initial pleadings, and that was essentially whether or not this was a final order and this is rightfully this court to hear it. Contended, yes, it is, absolutely, because under Code Section 17.1-405, the appellate jurisdiction extends to any final judgment order of a circuit court involving a controlled disposition of a child. This order, as entered by the circuit court of Floyd County, served to extinguish my client's rights to her child, essentially saying she never had any rights in the first place. It serves as a termination of parental rights, and now the Department of Social Services is in hot standby to have this child adopted out.
Counsel, I hate to interrupt you so early in your argument, but in reference to the finality of the order, that usually deals with where the entire matter is disposed of. How are you indicating that the circuit court's denial of giving full faith and credit to the North Carolina order is in fact final? Because isn't there still left within the court's determination, both between the juvenile court and the circuit court, the foster care review plan, and other things that were still left to do as it relates to termination?
There is as to the child, yes, Your Honor, there is, but not as to Ms. Bradley, who's, they're saying, isn't a parent, has no legal rights to this child, has no legal connection to this child, she's out of the case. So it served as a final order as to her. She's completely stripped of any...
Although the order itself doesn't make any definitive statements about the fact that she does not have standing, because what you're essentially arguing, it sounds like, is more something akin to a standing, as well as the fact that she now has her parental rights terminated. Is that how I understand your argument to be, in reference to how the court viewed this North Carolina order?
That is how the court is viewing it, when it's sent back to it with the foster care plan now that says adoption.
But the foster care review plan was appealed separately and was not part of the dispositive part of the whether to give full faith and credit from the North Carolina order.
Right, but if she's not a parent, she's not part of that foster care process anymore. And that's the situation that we're facing. It's absolutely final as to her because of that. She's not part of the foster care plan.
How do you say that she's not part of the foster care plan?
Because she's not a parent. She's not being considered as she, of course, she doesn't have custody. The department has custody.
Right.
And there no services will be provided to her. There'll be no reunification attempted with
what
this
about,
child.
What about the standards stated in that? No, this isn't part of your argument, but comes to mind when I think about it, the Troxel case, where a person who has legitimate interests actually can't participate in the determination of visitation, custody, and the things like that, as long as she's able to prove that she has an interest in the child.
But a legitimate interest under a custody issue is as a custody proceeding, maybe, but not in terms of her parental rights to this child. There's the statute regarding a person with a legitimate interest can file for custody, mm-hmm. right? And that's not disputed. But it's her parental rights that are at issue here that have been summarily dismissed by the circuit court.
Let me ask another question in reference to the jurisdictional part. What is it that you're aware of that supports the fact that this is even an order that the circuit court could consider? Simply put, is this an order that the circuit court could actually review? Is it appealable?
The order from the juvenile court?
The order from juvenile court finding that it was not going to extend the full faith and credit.
Because it had the same effect, Your Honor. When that court was entered, and when that order was entered by the juvenile court, that took the gravities out of the equation for the foster care. They were no longer to be considered in that process. Basically, what the juvenile court said at that point is, you're not the parent. We'll consider these two, who are the biological parents, we'll consider them as the parents, and any return home goals or any goals like that are going to be directed towards them, and they summarily signed away whatever rights they may have had at that point, and the foster care plan now is adoption. It's done as to...
But I guess what I'm asking more specifically as it relates to what's appealable from juvenile court to circuit court is simply this. You would agree that what is appealable to circuit court from juvenile court is statutorily derived, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. What I'm asking, simply put, is termination, foster care review plans. Those are all things within the statutory scheme.
Yes.
where is it in the statute or case law that supports that the finding from the juvenile court that this is not a order that they're going to extend full faith and credit to is something that's reviewable by the circuit court?
Because of the effect of that
determination. I understand that part of it. I'm just asking separately, where is it derived? Because it's not simply a part of the termination. It wasn't a part of the foster care review plan. I'm asking a very...
Well, actually it was, because part of the foster care plan was prove that you're the parents of this child, which I don't think they should have had to do. They have a birth certificate that says they are the parents of this child. The department wasn't satisfied with that. The orders, the court read the history of how that all came about, and then juvenile court looked at it and said, no, I'm not giving full faith and credit for that. You're not the parents of this child.
I guess what I'm asking is, because essentially you would agree that they were appealed separately. They were going to be heard together, but they were appealed separately. In reference,
because there were two separate orders.
I understand, but they were actually appealed separately, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so what I'm asking is, putting aside your argument about the fact that it affects the parental right, the termination of that, what I'm asking, is there any other authority that you're aware of that would allow the circuit court to review this from the juvenile court?
I think that's sufficient, Your Honor, because of the effect that it has on the way it's being treated in the juvenile court and at the circuit court, ultimately, is the effect to extinguish any rights that Mr. and Mrs. Gravely had to this child. That brings me to the real reason I think we shouldn't even be here today, is I don't think the Department of Social Services has standing to object to that order in juvenile court.
But that's not been raised, correct?
Ma'am?
Your statement that they don't have standing, that's not been raised.
Actually, it has. It was in my, I raised it as an issue, and it was 5 or 6, I think, on my...
Did you raise it at the trial court?
Your Honor?
Did you raise it below?
I did, and it's in the transcript as well.
And can you give us a reference to the transcript?
Give me just a moment. My memorandum of objection to the order of the court, which is on page 26 and 27 of the appendix, it's paragraph 3.
Okay.
And the argument regarding standing is pretty simple, because the department cannot be parent to the child. They can be the custodian, but a custodian doesn't necessarily go to parentage. In every case that, well, actually, the department actually didn't respond in their brief to the standing argument regarding ad litem dead, and he cited one case in his, which was the Stockton versus the State of Thompson, I believe. Yeah, Stockton versus the State of Thompson, which is a North Carolina case, adjudicated their law on the same, which oddly enough is fairly similar to what we have. And he points out who can be parties to those things. And their laws are the same thing. But the one thing the guardian ad litem did not point out in his brief is that the North Carolina court mentioned in that case, stated quite clearly in that case, that a child is not a necessary party to a parentage issue. And it's very similar in our case here under our code, under section 20-49.2, which says a child may be brought in as a party on a paternity issue, but it's not required. It doesn't say must, it doesn't say shall, it says may. And if it be brought in, a guardian ad litem shall be appointed. The North Carolina court says the same thing about there. So the only necessary parties to this case were the people who were at issue and the people who are subject to that order, which were the Gravelys and the biological parents who appeared before that court. The bulk of the department's argument as to the reason why we can't grant full faith and credit. credit rests on the UCCJEA, which I have argued, and I would still argue, does not apply in this case, because the UCCJEA applies to custody determinations. Counsel for the department has cited on numerous occasions 20-146.1 with the custody proceedings mentioning paternity issues. Where that is an issue, you have to read the next paragraph that says custody determination is a judgment, decree, or other order of a court providing for the legal custody, physical custody, or visitation with respect to a child. The order out of North Carolina court does no such thing. It does not address those issues. It specifically says the order of the court in Floyd County regarding custody is in effect, and it didn't change that in any way. It strictly had the parentage issue before it, and the only parties that were necessary for that were before that court. The issue of subject matter jurisdiction is not one that this court has allowed a review on. There was a case that it was an unpublished case, White versus White, out of this court in 2015 that involved foreign registry of a Swiss worker from Switzerland. How that court got subject matter jurisdiction is irrelevant. We don't look to that. That's their authority. That's their local jurisdiction. That's their local say, this is how we'll let this court work. UCCJEA really pertains to personal jurisdiction. Do we have the right parties before the court? Is everybody necessary? And every case that the department cites goes to that. Personally, are the right people there? Well, the right people were before the court in North Carolina. The only people who mattered were before the court in North Carolina.
Is there anything that you want to comment in reference to the fact that the matter was currently pending before the court before the second order from North Carolina was entered and its effect on the UCCJEA?
It had no effect, Your Honor. That's the point, because it was not a custody determination. Custody proceedings can include parentage, can include paternity, where custody is at issue. This matter in North Carolina specifically said we're not dealing with custody. We're dealing strictly with who is the mother and father of this child. And that court had jurisdiction over that. They had subject matter jurisdiction, and counsel for the guardian ad litem misstates my argument on that. I'm not saying you can appear before a court and abuse subject matter jurisdiction. You can't. But you can give personal jurisdiction to a court by appearing, and that's what the parties did. And it was the right court to do so. That's where the child was born. That court had jurisdiction to do that. The court had subject matter jurisdiction, and the people who were necessary parties that did appear before that court, so they had personal jurisdiction over it as well.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Stephen Durbin on behalf of Floyd County Department of Social Services. The issue that the court actually asked us to address, that whether the cert court order was appealable, the position of the department is that it was not appealable and is not properly before this court.
Counselor, I hate to do to you what I did to your worthy opponent, but I'm going to jump in early and ask you a question in reference to the jurisdictional piece. One of the arguments that he's making is the reason that this is something that is properly before us is because it is a final order, because effectively it terminates the rights of the appellant. That's at least how I understand his argument to be made about the finality or why he's saying that it would be a final order. Do you want to address that point?
I'd be happy to. If you look at the cert court order, it actually remands to the juvenile court for further proceedings. So those arguments, those issues, are properly raised in the juvenile court, and then if on appeal to the circuit court. The department would concede that the appellant had the child in her home for a number of years and was in a caregiver position, so we would concede that they're standing for a custody petition, and they are to be considered among other dispositional alternatives as far as achieving a goal for the child, whether that be adoption by the appellant, whether that be a custody transfer back to the appellant, whether it would be adoption to another third party. So it doesn't divest her of the ability to participate in the proceedings, the next phase of those proceedings, or to raise what issues she may at that time.
In counsel, as I understand the code section, then the foster care plan, which I think was appealed, and then wasn't that one of the things, one of the orders that was appealed, if the foster care plan would be the appropriate place, is that what you're saying, would be the appropriate place to address or could be appealed to this court? Is that your position?
That is. If you look at what was before the circuit court at the time, it was the appeal of the guardian ad litem to the approval of the initial foster care plan, which designated goals of return home, and at that time it was return home to the appellant. The guardian ad litem withdrew that appeal, and it's not before this court. The other matter that was before the circuit court was the appeal of the appellant to the foster care review order, the next stage in the foster care proceedings. Again, that documented goal of return home, that appeal was withdrawn. And the only matter, really, I guess, at issue is the full faith and credit determination, but that was remanded to the juvenile court for further proceedings. The department does not recognize that there's any order before this court that is subject to appeal.
Is the order denying full faith and credit one that could have been appealed from the juvenile court to the circuit court? What is your position on that? Is that an appealable order even to the circuit court?
I really interpret that as a interlocutory determination to give guidance to DSS, to the department, regarding what the reasonable efforts, where the reasonable efforts to reunify should be directed.
But how can that be interlocutory if it is essentially extinguishes someone's rights?
It doesn't. We don't concede that it extinguished any rights. What rights she has are based on her relationship with the child, and those can be raised in any proceeding in which her rights would be infringed. Right now, the only matters before the circuit court were, again, the initial foster care plan and the foster care review order, and both of those appeals were withdrawn. Now, the full faith and credit issue may be properly raised in subsequent proceedings, whether that be on a permanency planning petition or on the...
But I would imagine if that was attempted, someone would argue that there's collateral estoppel or res judicata or something. They would say, you can't do it now, it's too late, you needed to do something about it earlier. Sort of like a Hobson's choice. If I don't appeal it, then I may run into the problem of somebody saying, when I'm collaterally stopped down the road, if I do appeal it, claim is that it's not a final order, it's interlocutory in nature, so where do we go?
Well, I think that issue, what the issue would be before the court in future proceedings would be whether a return to appellant would be in the child's best interest, and whether reasonable efforts had been made. And I don't think that necessarily forecloses the argument that, notwithstanding the circuit court's order denying full faith and credit and remanding, there was no finality to that. That determination.
But by its very nature, when you're talking about, when I hear the word terminate, I'm thinking final, that's it.
Well, it's not a termination, though. It's a ruling that the North Carolina proceedings were without jurisdiction and are not going to be recognized in Virginia. It's not a termination under 16.1-283 of the Code of Virginia. think there's a distinction there.
Counsel, you're indicating that from your position, it is something that would be akin to an interlocutory order?
Yes.
Where is it that the, I guess the cause has been adjudicated in reference to what actually happens with the child? How would that actually be an interlocutory order?
I'm not sure I think what the court is asking is, did the determination of full faith and credit adjudicate the principles of the cause to make it appealable? And our position is that it did not. Again, the only two matters that were before the circuit court were petition of the department for the initial foster care plan and foster care review. And again, those appeals were withdrawn. In closing on that issue, although the full faith and credit issue may come into play in future proceedings, there was nothing before the circuit court. There was no cause, as contemplated in 17.1-405, that was wholly adjudicated because those appeals were withdrawn. The only two causes before the court were those two matters, the appeals of which were withdrawn. On the issue of standing, the appellant's argument does not apply to the proceedings below in circuit court because, again, the only two matters that were before the court were the approval of the two foster care plans. The Department of Social Services had custody of the child. They clearly had standing to file petitions for approval of those plans. Whether there were other defenses or contentions raised in the context of those proceedings is not a standing issue. It's an issue of the court giving guidance to the department on what efforts and who the appropriate parties were. So I think that Mr. Sobey's argument would apply to proceedings in North Carolina if the department sought to have those orders vacated there. The question of standing, whether we would have standing to proceed before the North Carolina court, that could be raised. But as far as standing in the circuit court on the matters before the circuit court, the department clearly had standing.
So your argument on the standing issue is that you have a statutory basis for standing, and so we don't have to get into the traditional analysis for standing because your standing or the standing of the department is based in statute.
Absolutely. This case is all about jurisdiction. The full faith and credit clause and all the cases cited by the appellant are contingent upon there being subject matter and personal jurisdiction in the court that issued the judgment.
Well, he also argues that the UCC JEA is not applicable in reference to the court's determination of the order because of the fact that it's not a custody determination. Do you want to address that?
Certainly, Your Honor. The courts who have addressed it, cases that I've cited in my brief in similar contexts, have found that when you're terminating parental rights, when you're divesting parental rights in one party, the biological parents, and vesting them in another party, that is a proceeding subject to the UCCJEA. Berwick v. Wagner is the primary case on point. That's the case where a same-sex couple was married in Canada, had a surrogacy in California, and then resided in Texas. When their marriage dissolved, each filed competing custody petitions. The court of Texas determined that the orders concerning the surrogacy in California, where the parental rights of the surrogate mother and her husband were terminated, were custody proceedings under the UCCJEA. And I think that court observed that although custody was never explicitly mentioned, those were UCC JEA, in the definition of a child custody proceeding, clearly recites that termination of parental rights is a proceeding subject to its provisions.
Can you give us a cite to the UCC JEA that says that?
It's in the definition section of the UCC JEA. I cited it in my brief, Your Honor. If the court would like, I can.
That's fine. Okay. I'll dig it up.
Here we have proceedings in North Carolina where the biological parents are divested of custody. With regard to the 2014 order, the biological father was not before the court. There was no personal jurisdiction there. And there was no jurisdiction in the North Carolina court because you have a child who, albeit was born in North Carolina, was residing in Virginia at the time that the 2014 order was entered. You had the child was residing with, at all relevant times, residents of Virginia.
But I think appellant's position is that you don't look behind the order, that you have to give the order full faith and credit.
I think
if you're talking jurisdictional issues as it relates to the North Carolina order, and if I understand the argument, it's you don't look to that.
The cases cited by the appellant all recite that full faith and credit is given to orders, decisions of sister states, provided they had jurisdiction to enter the order in the first place. So I think you can, that's sort of the one thing you really can look behind, is whether there was subject matter jurisdiction or personal jurisdiction. I think that to the extent that the appellant is arguing otherwise, I don't think that is supported by law.
Well, and I don't want to mischaracterize it. I think he's arguing more to the fraud part of it, so I don't want to say that that's what he's indicating. I'm just asking.
Fair enough. And fraud notwithstanding, there was simply no jurisdiction. The 2014 order, there's no jurisdictional basis for it. The 2016 order is even stronger because at that time, the Floyd County Juvenile Domestic Relations District Court was exercising jurisdiction in conformity with the UCC JEA. And for those reasons, we would ask that the court.
Thank you, counsel. One moment, sir. I'm going to allow the guardian ad litem to have some time.
I will be very brief.
Certainly.
He was going to kneecap you if he didn't get out of the way. So.
May it please the court, I am Anthony Needham. I'm the guardian ad litem for the young man. I will start off by conceding, as my friend Mr. Sobey has said, and I think that he is correct with regard to North Carolina law, the child is not a necessary party in North Carolina to either custody or paternity proceedings. I think that both counsel have very articulately argued whether or not this is a final order. I will not belabor the court with mine. I would say I would very much agree with Mr. Durbin and his assessment. I will say that the appellant's husband, Mr. Bradley, does have a custody petition pending before the Floyd County Juvenile Domestic Relations Court, where it is Kirk Elner going along with the current foster care plan.
But you would agree that a custody case is very different than a termination case.
I would, Your Honor, and I think as Your Honor yourself stated, the difference between someone with a legitimate interest and someone with parental rights. So, Judge, I think that the department nor the guardian ad litem are seeking to terminate the Gravely's parental rights in North Carolina. We simply can't do that in North Carolina. They are this child's parents, no matter how they obtained that. However, what we've sought, and I believe that Mr. Durbin is correct, essentially when we were looking at whether or not services on the part of the department had to be provided to the Gravely's for an effort to return home, the court issued a sort of an advisory as to whether or not, and that's why you get these orders coming to this court, and that Mr. Sobey appealed to the circuit court because essentially that said that with regard to the reasonable efforts that had to be made, the department didn't have.
Why, Why didn't this case follow the traditional, and you obviously are very experienced guardian ad litem and know how these cases work, and both Judge Chafin and I were juvenile court judges, and we've seen these cases where they're competing jurisdictions that have the abilities, I'm not going to use authority or jurisdiction, but the ability to adjudicate the rights of the parties. And usually what will happen is the judges will talk to each other on the telephone and figure it out before you get into this morass of orders, competing orders and the like. Why didn't that happen here?
So, Your Honor, I think that that is something that should happen. And I think, honestly, when we come back with regard to the custody petition for Mr. Bradley, I think that that is going to be something that I'm going to ask the court to do. The evidence would suggest that, quite frankly, we get into this, and as counsel's alluded, this allegation of fraud, which I don't think is dispositive in this case, but we did get into that, and the court simply stated, at this point, I'm speaking of the circuit court, not the JDR court, they simply weren't going to entertain what they believed to be a fraudulent motive, a fraudulent order. So, Judge, I do think that we're going to be addressing that again in the custody petition, because I would think that counsel for the mother is going to argue that she is a parent out of North Carolina and therefore entitled to the presumptions that come with it with regard to custody. So, quite frankly, Your Honor, I think we're going to be back with regard to the same issue, most likely a little later down the road. Judge, with regard to the merits of the case, with regard to jurisdiction, I do want to clarify a few things. I do not believe, and with regard to the full faith and credit argument, not even getting to the UCCJEA, which I don't believe that this word complies with the meaning and the purpose of that article. Simply put, you can attack an order of a sister state based upon jurisdiction, subject matter jurisdiction. Specifically in this case, setting aside the UCCJEA, quite frankly, the North Carolina court did not have jurisdiction for basically three reasons. One, as my friend Mr. Sobey has stated in my argument, the motion or the complaint for declaratory judgment was brought by Mr. and Ms. Bradley under North Carolina General Statute 49-16. The only parties that can bring the statute are the parent, the father, or the presumptive father, a guardian ad litem for the child, or it says in Part B, the Department of Social Services, if the child is likely to be the military of the state. In this case, whenever counsel in North Carolina sought a complaint for declaratory judgment and asked that the prior order be vacated, at that point, the local Department of Social Services in Floyd County was the guardian. The child was, at that time, the ward of the state. And therefore, they should have been a party to the actual proceeding in North Carolina. Furthermore, the statute that sets out the petition procedure for obtaining an order of paternity in North Carolina is 49-14. And 49-14A states that you have to have it used to be a certified copy of the birth certificate. However, in 2005, that certification requirement was done away with. But it still left the certification requirement, it still left the birth certificate as a required part. In this case, you don't even have that. This was a consent order drafted and presented to a judge. There was no petition. There is a birth certificate listed in the appendix, and I think it's around page 87, if I'm not mistaken. And that was the product of Mr. Sobey, and that was the birth certificate that was obtained by the Bradleys after the North Carolina court deemed them to be the biological parents of this child. But that is not the original birth certificate that was issued, and it is required under 49A. And Judge, I would submit to the court of the case is Reynolds versus Motley, which cites 385 SE2D 548. That's a 1989 case, so that goes back prior to the requirement with regard to the certification of the birth certificate. So even though it's still good law, even though the certification requirement is there, that case says unequivocally, if that petition is not filed with the birth certificate, that the North Carolina court lacks jurisdiction. That is a North Carolina case. Judge, finally, with regard to the third reason, so the first being is that the Gravelys, not in, was not attached and therefore divested of them. If you look at 49-17, jurisdiction over non-resident or non-parent, non-present persons, North Carolina general statute is for the legitimization of children born out of wedlock. That's all this code section is for. It is not for adoptions. It is not for surrogacy agreements. It is simply put, just simply that, with regard to making these children legitimate. Under Section A, what would give that court jurisdiction is the act of sexual intercourse within the state that occurred resulting in the conception of the child. That didn't happen. And then B, the jurisdictional basis in Section A of this section shall be construed in addition to and not in lieu of any basis or basis for jurisdiction in North Carolina General Service, General Statute 174.4, which is just a general and personam jurisdiction. So, Judge, for those three, those three reasons, the North Carolina court simply lacked jurisdiction. I don't think that we need to get into the fraud. I don't think we even need to get into the UCCJEA. Counsel's arguments on their own that you have to apply full faith and credit fail with regard to the jurisdiction requirement.
Thank you, counsel. Are there any questions?
No.
Thank you, sir.
The guardian ad litem is asking the court to do a subject, is substitute your judgment as to the jurisdictional, the jurisdiction is in North Carolina, for the North Carolina judge, who, on the face of his order, said, this is why I have jurisdiction over this case, this is why I have jurisdiction over these people, this is why I have jurisdiction over these matters.
That's what happens all the time in full faith and credit cases, where you're making a determination as to whether or not the reviewing court, the original court, actually had appropriate jurisdiction over it to allow us to give full faith and credit. In other words, the way I understand full faith and credit is, Virginia law may disagree with what the other state does, but as long as the other state did it right, Virginia's going to recognize it. And what's being suggested by the Guardian is that North Carolina didn't do it right.
But this is what the Supreme Court of the United States said about that in VL versus EL in 2016, is that the jurisdictional inquiry, however, is a limited one. If the judgment on its face appears to be a record of court of general jurisdiction, which this one does, such jurisdiction over the cause and the parties is to be presumed unless disproved by extrinsic evidence or by the record itself, which has not been done.
But
he can argue all he wants about it, but he hasn't proven anything.
I think the part that he's arguing is that at the point where the second order came up from North Carolina, the department then was in fact a party that was required to be a part of the order.
But
so
it's not.
I'm addressing what he's saying in terms of the argument for the jurisdictional piece.
But that's the point, is that they're not required to be in that. The only parties are the ones who are actually before the court. That's the only ones that the order can pertain to, and that's who it applies to. But you brought out something interesting on that, too. 49 out of 50 states right now recognize Katrina Bradley and Luther Dean Bradley as a parent of this child. Virginia's the only one that doesn't. And that's what this whole full faith and credit thing is all about. The counsel for the department raised the issue about that it still has the foster care plan to go through, but the rights of a parent versus the rights of a legal stranger to this child are so completely different on that, that this is absolutely a final order terminating her parental rights. And as to standing, only people who can complain about that order are the ones who were involved in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stubbe. We'll come down and greet counsel.
All rise.